This podcast is proudly produced and presented by the Zoomer Podcast Network, home of great podcasts like Marilyn Lightstone Reads, Idea City on the Air, and The Garden Show. You're listening to an exclusive podcast of The Garden Show with Charlie Dobbin, heard every Saturday morning at 9 on Zoomer Radio, the new AM 740. Welcome, friend, to our weekly garden party. We hope you brought along your questions because it's time to dish the dirt. On The Garden Show with Charlie Dobbin, exclusively on Zoomer Radio.
Hello, Charlie.
Good morning, Frankie.
You are in a sunshiny mood.
I've been up since 4 o'clock this morning, yeah. So it's like
smiling
lunchtime.
Your face. Could it be it was because you dragged your poor husband, Elliot, in here?
And he kept me company on the drive.
Yeah,
there you go.
Boy, what a snowfall. Now, I don't know whether you got as much as...
Not as much as you.
I showed
you
Charlie some pictures
hammered.
Of just outside the back door there, the deck. Holy mackerel. But darn near a foot and a half anyway.
Wow.
You know, yeah. It was
very windy at our place, though, so I have no idea what blew, like what dropped, because it was blowing around so much.
Well, exactly. I walked out the back door and went over my knees in a big drift just trying to take some garbage out. Oh, God. Anyway.
Gotta love it.
That's it. But here we are on The Garden Show.
Yes, we are.
And, you know, the day is looking much better than I thought it was going to look. I think forecasters were calling for a cloudy day, but look at it outside. A lot of blue in the sky.
And it was nice and bright this morning.
Mm-hmm. So let me give you the phone
numbers.
Do
your job, my friend.
I have got to do my job. Okay. In Toronto, call if you'd like to talk to Charlie Dobbin. If not, talk to me. 416-360-0740. Then anywhere in the province, it is toll-free, 1-866-740-4740. Our little mantra goes this way. Call early, call often, one question per call. And if you happen to... Oh, my goodness.
Oh, hilarious.
I left my little bell.
Well, that's okay.
Ding-a-ling-a-ling-a-ling.
When?
When I get it back, and you're a first-time caller...
We should put wings on the bell.
Yeah.
When you think about it, really.
I guess I left it on my desk out there.
I guess you did.
So there you go. Hey. I've done my job. Well, most of it anyway.
It's the way it goes.
Okay.
So listen, couple of things. I've
yes.
got updates coming out of my ear, so
okay.
let me get to it. Do you remember last week, Judy phoned in from Stratford, and she was growing a stub of a romaine she had bought, you know, eaten the romaine, but had taken the little stub at the bottom, the stump, with the leaves gone, and had suspended it over a glass of water, and now new little leaves were coming up, and she wondered, should I leave it in water, or should I put it into soil?
Oh.
And then I said something about roots, and she says, no, there's no roots. So here's the answer to that question. And it's actually very trendy what you're doing, Judy. So trendy that a brand new book has just been published, like hot off the press, called Regrow Your Veggies by Melissa Ropach and Felix Lil. Brand new, just out as of February the 11th. So, yeah, it's that new.
Growing vegetables from roots, cuttings, and what else?
Oh, and
something else.
God knows. But bottom line is, here's what you do.
Yeah.
Apparently, a shallow bowl, if you're going to do that romaine lettuce as an example. So, shallow bowl, just what you've done, suspend it with a little tiny bit. You want the stump or the stem of
just
that.
Just the bottom of that to be in the water.
But
right?
a half an inch covered in water.
Oh, okay.
You will get the leaves as you're getting, and do harvest them because more will come, but do avoid the slime in the water. So every week or so, wash the bowl and change the water.
Right.
All right.
Okay.
And there's that phone. It's not on silent. All right. I guess what we should do properly right now is go to a break because then it's spring, right? There's lots going on in the world of horticulture. So based on the time, we should probably go to our first break and then let's come back and give you some of my events that are happening.
A very good plan devised on the fly. I love that about you, Charlie. You just tap dance your way through life. We'll be back here on The Garden Show very shortly.
Don't change stations just because the weather changes. Garden tips and advice all year round. This is The Garden Show with Charlie Dobbin, exclusively
on Zoomer Radio.
Okie dokie, Charlie. Now, you have a whole whack of stuff there. Let me give the phone numbers first, okay? And just let you know what's going on. And there are lots of lines open. So if you ever thought, well, hey, I call and the line's busy. No, you got lots of lines right now. 416-360-0740 in Toronto. Anywhere in the province, toll free, 1-866-740-4740. So away you go to the phone lines. Meanwhile, Charlie's going to give
update
us a little information here. Yeah,
exactly. Well, you remember the orchid show that happened here in Toronto? Well, you were away, but anyway, yeah. The orchid show happened in Toronto Botanical Gardens. Well, this is a continuation. The Royal Botanical Gardens is home to the 39th annual Spring Orchid Show and sale this weekend. Mm-hmm. So, of course, that's in Burlington. The show is open noon to 5 today and 10 to 5 tomorrow at the Royal Botanical Gardens, 680 Plains Road West in Burlington. Mm-hmm. If you love orchids or you want to learn about orchids, there's your place to go. And then go a little bit further south, the Niagara Frontier Orchid Society is hosting their orchid show next Saturday, March the 7th and Sunday, March 8th from 10 to 4 at the Buffalo and Erie County Botanical Gardens. Mm-hmm. That's at 2655 South Park Avenue in Buffalo, New York. Of course, there's similar to the Toronto and the Burlington shows, displays, demos, vendors and supplies. So an excellent place to go to speak to experts and to pick up that bark or that special pot that you might need for transplanting. Mm-hmm. One more thing I'd just like to share with you is next Saturday, March 7th, the London Middlesex Master Gardeners present Seedy Saturday. That's from 10 to 3 p.m. at the Carling Heights Optimist Community Centre at 656 Elizabeth Street in London. Now, here's an opportunity to shop your local vendor marketplace. There's seeds, supplies, garden decor. There's regional gardening experts at the all-day speaker series. Of course, all the community gardening enthusiasts will be on hand. And there's annual seed exchange. Admission is only $5 and children under 12 are free.
And there you go.
There you go.
The phone lines. Yeah, let me just emphasize that again because we had a little bit of phone problems earlier this morning, but I think they're being solved. So,
go ahead.
Okay, in Toronto, 416-360-0740, and anywhere in the province, toll free, 1-866-740-4740. Your property out there in Prince Edward County, have you come along with your planning on what you're going to be doing with it yet?
That's a big, long story.
Yeah. I know it's a fairly sizable, 2-acre lot?
There? Yeah, 2-acre lot, and it's beautiful. I mean, we have the lovely forest at the back, sort of back 40. There's a lovely old dry stone wall kind of buried in the woods there. Uh-huh. I think I told you, or I was certainly talking to Sean Patil while you were away, about my hibernaculum, which is back there, which is a pile of rocks that have been collected by a farmer over the years, and I saw a lot of garter snakes there in the fall.
Yeah.
So I think I've got a hibernating of cluster or two of garter snakes back there, which is very cool. And speaking of Sean Patil, he mailed me seeds for pawpaw trees. So pawpaw trees are native to this neck of the woods, Carolinian forests. They are somewhat unusual, and you just don't find them for sale in the average nursery. Mm-hmm. And he mailed me the seeds, and I've got them in my refrigerator, and I will be pulling them out of the fridge in the next couple of weeks and seeing if they will germinate and starting my own little pawpaw forest. So pawpaws are make a really neat fruit that's actually an edible fruit. It's not like almost like a mango or a papaya if you can get to the fruit before the animals do.
Yeah, exactly.
But yeah, so I've got sort of some fun things going on that way. And the planning is all underway to do horrible things. I shouldn't say horrible, but just seems like so much money, right? We have to pave our driveway.
Yeah.
Our driveway it's like a $13,000 bill to pave a driveway. Like, it's just crazy.
Ye gods.
Yeah.
Okay.
So anyway, that's hovering also over all of us. But that's part of the deal. That's part of the covenant with the county is that we will have a paved driveway.
I like that. Covenant. Well.
Covenant, yes.
Well.
Look, it looks like we have somebody calling from Brantford named Ila.
Okay.
No, maybe? Yes, no. Let's try. Good morning, Ila. Are you there?
Yes, I'm calling from Brantford. I'm first-time caller.
Oh, hey, hold on.
Oh, ding-a-ling-a-ling.
thank you, Frank. Okay. And I have a 30-year-old hibiscus tree.
Wow.
The Hawaiian, whatever. Mm. And it's beautiful, the largest red flowers. And I've been trying for the last couple of years to get cuttings before I lose it somehow.
Oh, yeah.
And I haven't succeeded. Can you suggest something? How can I root some of these cuttings?
Well, I mean, right now and for the next 2 months is going to be your best time to take cuttings, because right now is when you've got the new growth starting on it, right? You've got some nice green tips have been growing. Just the days are getting longer, plant is responding, and you're getting some new fresh growth. So what I would be doing is, you know, anytime, like I said, now and for the next 2 months, you want cuttings that are 4 to 6 inches long, so that's 10 to 15 centimeters long. You'll remove one or two leaves, lower leaves. And then hibiscus will typically root in a glass of water, a jar of water. Make sure that, you know, they're tip cuttings. You're taking little cuttings from the tips of your plant. And they are typically quite easy to root. Have you tried doing that before?
Yes, I did. And I have done it in the past, but I haven't succeeded. I even tried it in vermiculite with roots, a potter, but...
Oh.
I am not succeeding.
Well, a time of year matters. So is it possible that you were doing that in the fall by any chance?
No, because I usually give a good trimming to my tree end of February, March, because it grows huge then.
Wow.
Yeah.
Well, there's something funny going on there. Rooting hormone is good if you've got the rooting hormone called stim root. You dip your cut end of your little cutting into water, then into the powder, then knock off the excess. And yes, vermiculite works. Just make sure you keep it moist.
Okay. Yeah.
Sunny, reasonable, bright spot. Doesn't have to be sunny. Remember, with no roots, the plants can sometimes suffer for lack of water. So sometimes we'll put a little bit of saran wrap or a jar over top, make kind of a little mini greenhouse, keep the humidity around the cutting.
Uh-huh.
But again, not in direct sunlight if you're doing that.
So basically, you suggest the same thing what I have been doing. Whoops. I'm an avid gardener, and I have, you wouldn't believe the plants and shrubs and everything I have. So
What you've been doing sounds right. I'm not sure why that wouldn't have worked. Give it another go.
Okay.
All right.
I will do that. Thank you so much.
Thanks for calling.
Thank you very much for giving
me
a ring.
Yeah, because hibiscus are so vigorous.
Mm-hmm.
And like she said, she's had it for 30 years. And it's red. The reds are the most vigorous.
We've got to pull a halt to the side of the road momentarily. We have some commercials we have to get in.
Yes,
oh, yeah. That's right. This show is sponsored, for heaven's sakes, you know. And we'll be back to say hi to Maureen in North York here on The Garden Show with Charlie Dobbin.
Fur and feathers and bugs of all size. There's more going on in the garden than you realize. Should small creatures become a big problem, then you've got The Garden Show with Charlie Dobbin. Exclusively on Zoomer Radio.
Here we are.
Yes, and I just ran out to the workstation to get the bell.
We got the bell. First-time callers, come on down. So you know what Maureen is calling about is drying tulips.
Okay.
So I get the sense that maybe somebody special gave her a bouquet of tulips or some special color or something, and that she's wanting to preserve the flowers. You know how sometimes people do that with roses or something that's been given as a gift.
Hang upside down sort of thing.
Yeah, except that doesn't work very well with tulips. They tend to just drop their petals and you've got green stems and not a lot else. Now, there is a suggestion I see on the web that is prior to doing that upside down air drying, when they're still fairly, they're still, the petals are still quite vibrant, you pull out some hairspray. And a little bit of hairspray, which is, of course, a clear lacquer, will help hold those petals to the plant.
So
a very light spray all around the flowers of the hairspray, and then the upside down air dry in an airy room.
Right.
So that's a suggestion if indeed Maureen was calling about cut tulips.
Okay.
Otherwise, tulips are easy to keep forever and ever and ever because the bulbs, of course, just keep coming up.
All righty. The gremlins are attacking our phone system, but let's see if we can haul in another caller here. And a first-time caller, too, might I say. Hey, that's for Ray in Etobicoke. Hopefully he can hear us.
Yeah, so what Ray is calling about is how to kill an English ivy. I love it.
Oh, really?
Because you know what? It's really good question. English ivy has become a very invasive plant, like a really big problem. We used to think that English ivy was, you know, nice. It grows in the shade. It's vigorous. It's green. But, you know, they'll go up trees. They'll strangle trees. They'll go, you know, all kinds of parts of your garden where you don't want them. Oh. And before you know it, they're down the neighborhood. So they grow, English ivy grows as a ground cover or as a wall cover. And I know I had this problem back in my Richmond Hill garden where I actually hired my son and all his friends to come and help dig out English ivy.
Oh, man.
Because the roots are crazy. Yeah. It's like,
they go forever.
Well,
those kind of
it's
things.
Like they're like tree trunk roots. I mean, you think it's just a simple plant with shallow roots, but you got to really dig down and get the roots
and
out.
You can't leave any of them.
No, yeah, you can't leave any of them. So honestly, Ray, to get rid of English ivy, how to kill, I guess depending on where Ray's English ivy was growing, if it's a case, I mean, yeah, it's hard to say. If it's a case where it's a ground cover and it's covering the garden and you want to get it out of there, obviously you can pull up all that you can see. It's an evergreen plant. It's there year round. Wait till the spring. Get in there, cut it, pull it, do what you can, and get all the roots out. If it's one big old plant with a serious root system that's either up your wall or up a tree, you may need to be a little more, serious than that in terms of destruction of the root.
Mm-hmm.
So depending on where the root is.
Righty-ho.
I had a Boston ivy once that I unfortunately planted up against the house because I had this vision of how great it was going to be, and then ultimately it wasn't what I wanted, and it was a big mistake, and it was very hard to annihilate that Boston ivy. I eventually...
Would that cause damage to your foundation?
The mortar.
Okay.
And leaves, they got little suckers, eh? They hold on to the walls with these little suction pads, and they leave all the suction, and wasps make their nests inside. Like, it's all
so
just,
it's not
it's
good.
Ultimately not good. So, like I said, big mistake. We learn by doing stupid things. Right, but anyway, we eventually got out road salt, poured that on the root, that killed it just fine. But of course, it does make the soil in that area toxic, so you don't do that where you've got a garden. So Ray, you know, let us know if you can. More if I haven't answered your question, which reminds me, we are rebooting our system, but if anybody would like to, if you've phoned in and I've tried to answer your question and I haven't done it quite right, feel free, you can email me.
And keep in mind the podcasts, too. I think it's usually by about Wednesday that the Garden Show will be on podcast, which you can get to simply by going to Zoomer Radio, the web page, and it says, you know, shows, schedules, and there's podcasts.
That's right.
And then
scroll down
there,
to the
and
garden
we're there
show.
For what, the last 11 years?
I think so. Going on 12 years.
Yeah.
Or my email address here at the station is C, my initial C for Charlie, dot Dobbin, so C dot D-O-B-B-I-N, at mzmedia, that's one word, mzmedia.com.
Gotcha. Okay.
And so there's that, if I haven't answered your question thoroughly.
You know, I'm looking at the date in the calendar, of course. It's leap year. It's the
29th. Today's leap day.
Happy
leap day.
And so you've got a little information about leap day.
I did my research.
Are you
interested?
Yes, I am.
Okay. In some places, leap day has been known as Bachelor's Day.
Whoops. Here we go.
A man was expected to pay a penalty, such as a gown or money, if he refused a marriage proposal from a woman on leap day. Because traditionally men propose to women, right?
Yes.
But on leap day, women are allowed to propose to men. This is going back in history. So in many European countries, especially in the upper classes of society, tradition dictates that any man who refuses a woman's proposal on February the 29th has to buy her 12 pairs of gloves.
Oh, and that could, I'm sure, be kind of expensive.
And you know why? Because the intention is that the woman can wear the gloves to hide the embarrassment of not having an engagement ring. During the Middle Ages, there were laws governing this tradition. Like, this is serious stuff.
Well,
I'm telling you, Bachelor's Day, Leap Day.
Does that still exist in some countries, you know, or no?
I don't think so.
I'm
hoping this is really, really old. But it is fun. I mean, you right off the top of your head, you were wishing happy birthday to who? couple of people.
Oh, Glenn Miller and Jimmy Dorsey.
There you go.
Yeah.
And they're born on the same year, you said. Mm-hmm. So that's okay. Cool. All right, well,
we might have a call coming in here.
But we can try.
Jim, calling in from Strabain. Let's see if Jim's on the line. Good morning, Jim.
Yeah, so we can hear him. Go ahead, ask your question.
Yeah, what's your question?
He can't hear me, though.
No.
Redbud tree, that's all I know. Redbud. Maybe where to get it or how to, I wonder what he wants to know about Redbud. Redbud is a beautiful tree. Native.
Yep.
Proper name is Cercis canadensis. Kind of tells you it's from Canada. Beautiful heart-shaped leaves and phenomenal flowers in the spring. Glow in the dark, bright fuchsia pink flowers that are tucked very tight along all the branches, the tips out the stems, branches. It's a zone 6 plant, so you've got to live in a mild enough part of Ontario to be able to grow this plant, or parts of New York, obviously, you could grow it as well. Certainly near the lake, I planted one at my brother's house when I did his garden design, and it's lovely. Does very, very nice. Nicely grows very beautifully there. But it's not a hard plant to grow as long as you're mild enough. First time I ever saw one in full flower was just outside Chatham, your part of your old stomping grounds when you were a kid. And it was this big monster tree, like, you know, 40-foot tall old tree on a farmhouse, farmstead, as I'm driving along some country road outside Chatham, glowing pink. And I slammed on my brakes. I was like, what is that? And I, you know, by stopping, I was able to see more clearly that was like a full-grown Cercis canadensis. They don't get that big into the Toronto area. Mm-hmm. That was down in the banana belt there in Chatham area. So lovely, lovely tree.
Now, we'd mentioned, of course, this being Leap Day.
Yes.
So tomorrow, 1st of March, a lot of people now are going to start to get cranked up. Like how long?
A
lion, goes out like a lamb, or right, vice versa. Folks are getting really turned on about getting their gardens going, and a lot of people are now starting to grow stuff inside.
That's right.
To get prepared to,
particularly the millennials
and what have you.
Did you know that the millennials, in my experience, obviously partially because I'm teaching so many at the school, but even in my children and their friends, they're all about starting seeds. Vegetable seeds.
Isn't that interesting?
Edibles. They love their edibles.
Is this a much improved situation regarding that as opposed to past years?
Like the vegetable seed business really took off started about 10 years ago and hasn't abated whatsoever. Okay. But it's just interesting because we tend to think, you know, we sort of stereotype that gardeners tend to be the retired crowd that has more time on their hands and they're going to putter around in their gardens and grow some African violets. But no, there is a whole generation that's putting a lot of effort into not just puttering in their gardens, but actually growing and taking food growing quite seriously.
Right.
So interesting that you would bring that up because I just, this past week, and gotta love Amazon, it was delivered so quickly. I just bought and had delivered a brand new grow light.
Oh.
An LED panel of lights, which I'm going to install in my basement to start some seeds, obviously.
Oh, there you
and,
go.
And it's I need that. I miss that. I had some grow lights and grow benches back in my last house.
Now, you mentioned light. I was speaking to a friend of mine the other day who she pretty well is convinced that she suffers from SAD, seasonally adjusted disorder. And I was saying, isn't there a light that you can buy?
It's called a happy light.
What the heck? Is that the name of it?
I think they're under that trade name, Happy Light. There's several sizes.
Okay.
They're generally speaking, they're all giving out, I think, fairly much the same wattage or foot candles, depending on how you measure it. But no, it's just that idea of spending some time in front of this glowing light. And it's kind of cool. The Toronto Public Library has several Happy Lights in the area where the chairs are, where you can hang out and read magazines and books. So there's a lot of, it's not just anecdotal, there's very good data on why spending like 20 minutes a day in front of a happy light can make you feel better, particularly in the dark days of December and January. I mean, today when I left home at 6 o'clock, Mm-hmm. The sun, the glow was starting on the horizon.
Oh,
so
lovely.
Days are definitely getting longer.
Look, I'm going to suggest we take another little break here,
okay,
and then come back, and at least we'll know a question that Annabelle has for us this morning on about hydrangea. So we will deal with that. Charlie will deal with that. I'll simply direct the phone call over to her. Okay, back in a moment here on The Garden Show with Charlie Dubbin.
Daffodils and daisies, bluebells and begonias, forsythia and foxgloves, marigolds, magnolia, lavender and lupins, dahlias, delphiniums, stocks, phlox, hollyhocks, tulips and sweet williams.
You've picked the right place for everything floral. This is The Garden Show with Charlie Dobbin, exclusively on Zoomer Radio.
Well, okay, Charlie, Frank Proctor, the sous chef of the garden, hopefully going to the phone line here now with Aldina, who's calling in from Cambridge. Good morning, Aldina.
Good morning, Charlie. Good morning, Frank.
Morning. What's
beautiful
going on?
Beautiful day here.
Oh, good to hear.
That's good.
Charlie, I called you about 3 weeks ago. This is just a little comment about planting my tulip bulbs that were in the fridge from the fall.
Oh, yeah.
Well, within less than a week, I had some about 2 inches up from the pot.
Okay.
So I'm very excited.
Nice.
I can't wait to see the flowers.
And you did put them in the fridge, right?
Or had... Yeah, I had them in the fridge
okay,
from
good.
The fall.
Oh, good. Okay, perfect.
And then I had asked you
planted.
What to do with them. You
yeah,
know,
yeah.
are they going to still do anything?
Nice.
So you just pot them up right away, so yeah. I did.
Excellent. Enjoy
and
those.
Up and out of the ground.
Yeah.
Beautiful. Okay, my question is about lucky bamboo.
Mm-hmm.
I had some in water, and the leaves were starting to go yellow.
Mm-hmm.
So I was a little concerned that maybe it needed to be potted up.
Okay.
So I potted it into soil.
Okay.
And I haven't seen any improvement as far as the yellowing. And another thing, too, is I'm finding that the soil doesn't seem to be, you know, drying up. It's been about a month.
Oh, my. Well, okay, so... Okay, so it was the lucky bamboo is actually a form of Dracaena that is grown typically in a vase of water,
oh.
and sometimes with little stones in the bottom, and they are considered a, you know, a lucky plant, an easy care plant. So you could have just left it in water, or you could plant it in soil. The thing is, when it's in water, the roots that have grown are designed for water.
Oh, okay.
So what's happening now is different roots and more roots have to grow. So the fact that you put it into soil and you put it into a clean, fresh potting mix of some kind, I assume.
Yes, they did.
That was, you know, sort of sterilized straight out of the bag. You
yes.
watered thoroughly once. And for now, what I would do is, it likes to be in a bright spot. It does not have to be in direct sunlight, but it definitely needs to be in a bright spot in your home.
Okay.
Do not water until that soil feels quite dry. It could be 2 months from now. Don't worry about it. When it is time to water, at that point, you could consider mixing up at half strength an all-purpose fertilizer. And that
okay.
will help with that yellowing. So
half
that
strength, you said?
Half strength, yeah. So if
okay.
if the fertilizer package, like a Miracle-Gro, for example, says 5 mils of the blue powder into 1 liter of water, you're going to go 5 mils into 2 liters of water, or
okay.
you know, half a teaspoon into 1 liter. Either way, just mix it so it's just half strength, and then do water thoroughly when it's time to water again with that half strength fertilizer. And I think you find that yellowing will very quickly disappear. But make sure the plant is in a bright spot, and you did put it in a pot with drain. Inch, right?
Yes.
Good.
Yes.
Perfect. You did good.
Yeah, I was just curious as to why it's taking so long for the soil to dry.
It
never occurred to me that about those roots.
Yeah.
I never thought of it that those roots are not the same as the roots that grow in the soil.
That's right. So just give it some time. It's a pretty tough plant.
Okay, right, in
yeah.
the soil.
Oh, it's likely going to be just fine.
Okay, because
okay,
it was so beautiful, but I was worried about the yellowing. I had it for several years, and it was looking really beautiful. I just didn't want it to continue with the yellowing.
That's
so
right.
I decided pot it up in the soil.
Makes sense. All right, well, good luck. I think it'll be
glad
fine.
Glad I could get through.
Yeah, thank you. I'm glad you were able to as well.
Yeah.
Congratulations.
Thank you.
Happy leap day.
Let's see if we can make that wondrous thing happen all over again. Now, I think we might have Lorraine on online from Mississauga. Good morning, Lorraine.
I'm from Cambridge.
Oh, okay. Is this Diane?
Oh, is this Diane then?
No, it's Lorraine from Cambridge.
Oh, okay.
Oh, okay.
Oh, got it. Okay.
All right, gotcha. All right, good morning.
Hi.
Aldina's nephew,
no,
neighbor.
Just, answer this question. I was wondering, when is it too late to tap a maple tree for syrup or do anything about that?
Oh, not at all. It's hardly started.
Okay.
Yeah, we had some nice warm days, what, about 10 days ago?
Yeah.
Sunny, warm days, and the sap was running quite fast. And so the people that are the maple syrup folk were out there starting the process, but it's been cold since then, so all the sap would have stopped running. Next week, we're going to get some warmth, and the sap will start to run again. And it will depending on the weather, it's likely to run for the entire month of March.
Yeah, and it's that's an experience that all, certainly kids,
yeah,
should be taking,
yeah,
part in,
yeah,
where they drizzle that sap start, over the snow,
the
clean snow.
Yeah,
oh,
yeah.
Make a taffy right there.
I know, it's so good. But you know what I love? Love the sap. I love the sap before it's boiled down to a syrup. It's just, it's like an elixir of the gods or something. It's just magical.
Yeah.
It's water, right? But it's just got that little hint of sugar maple.
Yeah.
So good. Oh, gotta love it. So, you know, Lorraine, you got lots of time. If you've got a maple that's begging to be tapped, you've got time to fool around and get that organized. And just, do your research. Don't over tap. Obviously, don't overtake the sap because the plant needs some of it in order to grow, but it's certainly any maple will provide sap for you if you want to do that.
Once again, we have to screech to a halt momentarily to have a few commercials from our fine sponsors, and we will come back to say hi to Anne in Wyoming, Ontario, my friends. Don't get too shook up there. Okay, back in a moment.
Don't change stations just because the weather changes. Garden tips and advice all year round. This is The Garden Show with Charlie Dobbin, exclusively on Zoomer Radio.
Well, Charlie, off we go to Wyoming. Hey, mm-hmm. Good morning, Ann. Welcome to the show.
Good morning.
Morning.
I always like to say I'm from Wyoming and just see people first.
Yeah, exactly.
When they look at me. My question, Charlie, is about a Norfolk Island pine.
Yes.
I bought it at the well-known nursery place of Walmart.
Yes.
Actually, surprisingly, it has turned into a very healthy plant. It's about 2 feet tall and in a probably 10-inch pot, I think.
Oh, okay.
What I'm wondering is, would I be able to put that outside once we get some warm weather?
Yep. You can. It is a tropical plant, so wait till we're frost-free.
Okay.
And then do the very gentle introduction to the real world. Do not put it directly into the sun. It's straight out into the shade for a few hours, for a couple of days, in and out, protected from the wind, protected from the sun. And over a period of 10 days to 2 weeks, slowly move it out further onto the deck or wherever you're putting it, mm-hmm. so that it's going to get it be in a bright spot. It doesn't have to be direct sunlight, though it wouldn't mind some direct morning light.
Okay.
It would not want that hot afternoon western light or southern light.
Okay.
And and it's going to be fine with the humidity and the warmth and everything. It's going to love all that.
Okay.
Did you just get it this past Christmas?
Yes.
Okay. So they are a lovely plant. The one thing you're going to watch for, if it's looking good now, you're probably, good to go for this spring and summer. But when you bring it in at the end of the summer, make sure that you give it a really thorough soap and water wash and rinse before you bring it in. And then when it's in the house, do whatever you can to maintain humidity around the plant, because they are very susceptible to spider mites.
Oh, okay.
And spider mites show up when our furnaces are on, when it's hot and dry.
Okay.
So otherwise, great plant. And they're sweet, right? It's like a miniature Christmas tree.
Yeah,
if you put little miniature ornaments, they help.
Yes.
They hold up quite well.
Mm-hmm.
Okay.
Right now, should I be misting it or anything?
You can. It would appreciate misting. It would also appreciate something as simple as a pebble tray below. So, like a cookie sheet with pebbles or gravel, pot sits on top, and you keep water around the gravel at all times just to keep that humidity high.
Okay. Right. Great. Thank you very much.
Thank you for calling.
You're welcome. Diane in Toronto. Maybe it's around the corner. Who knows? Let's find out, though. Welcome to the show, Diane.
Hi. Thanks for taking my call.
Good morning.
Yeah, go ahead.
I have a question regarding the Annabelle hydrangea.
Uh-huh.
It gets worms in the spring, so I'd like to find out how to get rid of those and to prevent them from coming up every spring.
Huh. Yeah, so this is the hydrangea where the leaves get knitted together by insects.
Yes, that's right. Yep.
You know what? I don't know if there is a way to prevent those. One, a couple things you can do. One is, I guess it kind of depends. Is it, have you just got the one Annabelle, or have you got a lot?
I have three together.
Okay.
So all three are susceptible to it.
Right. And last year, probably you saw quite a lot of them. So like hundreds of these little pods. Well, they look like pods, but they aren't really.
Yeah. So every year I pick off these little ones that are stuck together.
Yeah.
And stomp on them.
Nice.
And that's it. But they come up every year.
I know. And it's a good question. Leave that with me. I don't know if there's any way to prevent those. They,
okay.
Like so many insects, they come and they go. We have it's the old cycle with insects. So
yeah.
Certainly they have been bad the last few years. And for anybody who's not knowing what we're talking about, it's a little tiny caterpillar that gets into the growing tips of the hydrangea. And then as it starts to go move through its life cycle, it sends out silky webbing, and it protects itself by closing the leaves around and then stitching the leaves together so that the two leaves at the tip of the stems of the hydrangea look like little pods because they've been all stuck together by the insect that's inside there. One thing people will sometimes do is cut those, just cut them off, and of course don't drop them on the ground, cut them off and remove them from the property. You can burn them. You can stick them in the going out to the landfill kind of garbage. Don't stick them in a composter. Or you peel them open and you squish the insects.
Mm-hmm.
Those are the two things I can think of right now, and I've done myself. But to prevent them, I'm not so sure.
Okay.
But keep listening. If not this week, then next week I will report back.
Okay.
Oh, excellent.
Okay. Thank you, Diane. And we're going to go to our next caller. But just before we do, if my memory serves me correctly, Wellington is where Joan is located. And I remember this little town on the way to Picton. Every summer we go down to Lake in the Mountain. And I can't remember the name of the highway, but you
Loyalist
pass.
Highway. Thank
you. You go through a lovely little town called Wellington. And there's an antique store that just breaks me up. It's called Dead People Stuff. And I'm just wondering if I'm remembering that correctly. And if maybe Joan can verify that. Hi, Joan.
Hi, good morning. It must be my accent. My accent. I'm in Burlington.
No worries.
Okay.
That's okay.
Well, somebody else will answer that question for me, I'm sure.
Absolutely.
I'm sure. Charlie,
yep.
Last fall I was talking to you about planting bulbs in my tulip bulbs in planters.
Yes.
I put them in the garage all winter. Now my question is, when is the best time to put them outside?
So are they planted in pots in your garage?
Yes, they are.
Okay. Well, you know what? Is your garage pitch dark or do you get some light in there?
Only if I go in there.
Yeah, okay. So it's dark otherwise. And so they're planted into planters with drainage holes and potting soil, and you watered them at that time.
Yes, I did.
Are they covered at all? Do you have any kind of a plastic cover or any kind of a burlap or anything over top of them?
No, they're just underneath the patio table.
Yeah. Okay, so what I would do is two things are going to happen. One is, the weather's going to get nice, and you're going to drag them outside sometime in the next 2 to 3 weeks,
mm-hmm.
or they're going to start to grow.
Mm-hmm.
If they start to grow, they're going to be white. There'll be little white noses are going to stick up through the soil because it's so dark in your garage.
Mm-hmm.
So if you start to see those little white stems starting to poke through, then again, hopefully these aren't too heavy, these planters, because you're going to want to get them out in the sunshine, but if it's going to drop to 10 below zero at night, you're going to want to put them back in the garage.
Okay.
You can leave them out uncovered, exposed to all the elements once we're around zero. But as long as we're more than below zero, you've got to keep them protected in the garage.
I couldn't keep them protected outside then, with plastic or something at night?
Yeah, it doesn't work that well.
And
plastic isn't really a great protection. So better to almost, if you can. Yeah, I mean, yeah, it's hard.
No big deal.
Yeah, I think you'll find the weather will break in the next couple of weeks, and that's when you'll take them out and you'll be good. But if they do start to grow, you're going to want to take them out a little sooner.
Thank you so much.
All right. Thanks for calling.
Thank you, Joan. Burlington, not Wellington.
Wellington.
Oh, yeah.
Dead people
so
stuff.
I'm still, I guess, asking that question.
Well, you'll have to come visit.
Yeah,
because Wellington's not far from where I live, as
I
you know.
I know that.
Only 20 minutes
Edward
away.
County. Is that right?
That's right.
Yeah. Oh, well. Dead people stuff. I just love that name. Anyway, hey, been fun show this morning. All sorts of crazy stuff happening with
question.
Phone lines here and there. But thank you, folks, for kind of putting up with that and
helping us out. Yeah, I'm sorry that so many of you called, and I may or may not have answered your question.
Yeah,
so
I think the problem is now solved.
It appears to be.
Yeah.
Thank you to Joel for coming in and Carlos for holding tough. Just a quick announcement. 2 weeks from today, we will have a special guest here with us. Her name is Tara Nolan. She's quite well known in the horticultural industry. She's quite the author. She's penned several books, and she's got her latest book is just, you know, hot off the press. It's called Gardening Your Front Yard. And then I think the subtitle is something about big or small, great ideas for cool ideas for ways to garden your front yard. So, and she's lovely. Tara's lovely. She
and
lives
the
in
other
Hamilton.
Book we mentioned right off the top of the show was Growing from,
I think it was Regrow Your Scraps or something.
Yeah, that's right.
Oh, no, there it is. New book. Yeah, Regrow Your Veggies.
Right.
Yeah, so I'm just promoting that one because it was kind of made sense based on the call that we had last week from the question of, you know, how do I regrow? How do I keep eating my romaine?
Right.
Don't give up. Don't throw anything away. Just keep regrowing.
I can hear the boys next door gunning the engines.
Revving the engines.
Dave's Corner Garage on the way here on Zoomer Radio. I'll be back a little bit later this afternoon from 2 to 3:30.
You will, with Live in the City.
Yes, and that's then tomorrow, a big four-hour extravaganza, the Big Band Sunday night.
Good for you.
And yeah, I hope a lot of folks will tune in for that.
Well, happy Leap Day, everybody.
Yeah.
See y'all again.
This has been an exclusive podcast of The Garden Show with Charlie Dobbin. Heard every Saturday morning at 9 on Zoomer Radio, the new AM 740. This podcast is proudly produced and presented by the Zoomer Podcast Network, home of great podcasts like Marilyn Lightstone Reads, Idea City on the Air, and The Garden Show.